Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey, and I am joined by the lovely, the spooky Brian Muldoon.
Here I am. Brian's back.
He's back, and we have another Spooky Corner episode for you. If you haven't been listening to the Spooky Corner series for Spooky Season, we are doing a little four-episode series where I, myself, and Brian discuss different spooky creatures in various mythologies, folklores. I bring in some art examples. Brian talks film and pop culture. It's a great time.
God, so good. I'm living it here. This is it.
This is the dream, really. Just talking spooks all the time.
If you listened to our last episode, you heard that we teased we're going to be talking something real spooky today. Wendigos. Could be two different things, is what we've learned.
Yeah.
It may appear as a monster, and we'll discuss what the monster characteristics are, or it could be an evil spirit that takes over a very hungry person, as it would be.
That's one way to put it, a very hungry person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what I've learned in my research over the past few days is we got into this a little bit with banshees, how with folklore, stories are passed down. A lot of them are just told firsthand and not always written down. And so you end up with a lot of variations of mythical creatures, and they kind of take on lives of their own. And Wendigos are no exception to that, because I have like 6 pages of notes of just all the different approaches and characteristics, and
that is not exclusive to just history. That's the pop culture. Everyone has their own idea of what a Wendigo is.
It has definitely contemporarily become something that people have just stolen the name and just like created their own creature, which we will get into quite a bit later on, the misrepresentation of the Wendigo. But let's maybe start with the actual origin Wendigo. Yeah.
So it's an Algonquin creature in Algonquin mythology. So Native American, Northern Nova Scotia, Canada cultures described it as a monster or a spirit that would inhabit the bodies of desperate, hungry people. Because how it actually happens is if someone is desperate to the point that they would turn to eating another person, choose cannibalism, or just any sort of desperate situation, the spirit may basically enter this person and they become something much more terrifying. Is that what you found?
Yes and no, because it is complicated. Yeah, that is one approach to how the Wendigo as a spooky spirit kind of works. What I found in terms of stories from folklore of the Algonquin people is that Wendigos were a scary entity of some sort. So as you said, either a creature sometimes or a spirit in other cases, with an insatiable hunger for human flesh. They were also associated with winter, famine, and starvation, as you said. However, according to legend, one typically becomes a Wendigo as punishment for taboo behavior, i.e. cannibalism. This was like the big taboo behavior, and it was also very common in particularly harsh winters in Canada, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So if one is to turn to cannibalism, even if it is in times of famine, the punishment would be possibly being attacked or inhabited by a Wendigo. So there's a moral to the story to try and, you know, keep people from eating each other.
Yeah. And it seems like the more contemporary iterations always latch onto the cannibalism. That's the hot one. That's the hot taboo that we want to, like, you know, very sinister. But it didn't seem to be exclusively cannibalism in the earlier iterations. Like you said, it's a punishment. I saw that in, like, especially the Chippewa cultures, that they're basically, it's a punishment if they commit this sin, and the sin could be selfishness, gluttony, or cannibalism. That's
yes,
also included in it. But it's something that enters in the body if you choose the wrong way, the dark side.
Yeah, I think you touched on the most important theme within this mythology is the idea of greed and gluttony. It is a creature that is meant to scare you away from being greedy, from being gluttonous, from being cannibalistic, from taking more than your fair share.
Yeah.
And that is a theme that continues on into contemporary indigenous storytelling of the Wendigo.
And there was also, I thought I read that there were sometimes Wendigo in times of real desperation and famine that they would do actual rituals to ward off Wendigos. They would wear masks, they would dance backwards around a campfire and chant to ward off, say, no, we good, it's times are hard, but no Wendigos here, thank you.
Also, so that was, I mean, that was the main description I read about, and definitely the most reliable sources, the most well-researched sources, explained the Wendigo as a mythical being or mythical entity in that way. However, there are also more tales of Wendigo sightings over the years, some of them somewhat contemporary. And in those tales, these are often in Canada or sometimes around the Great Lakes area where the Wendigo originated. But sometimes there have been tales of Wendigo sightings in which the Wendigo is described kind of like Bigfoot, like a large, hairy beast-like creature. And these accounts read very much like Bigfoot sightings.
I read that too, that there, it seems to be a cousin of sorts in folklore of Bigfoot, that they both originated in similar regions. They have similar characteristics, but the Wendigo seemingly more gangly, more thin, like a starved beast versus the Bigfoot sort of ape-like man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's get into that a little bit, actually. Let's talk about the characteristics of the original OG Wendigo, the way it is described in Native American folklore, and then we can kind of move through how it's morphed and changed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's the same thing with what we were talking about earlier. There's a lot of iterations, right? Like the original OG one, I guess, in one culture, the Chippewa culture, described it as a huge monstrous beast that was coated or made of ice, and the human that it took over is basically where the heart should be.
Oh, that's interesting. So the human is in the heart and the rest of it is ice?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically just a giant, either made of ice or coated in ice, but the human that was the source is now where the heart should be. So I don't know if that's the essence is the heart, or there's an actual, in mythology, that's usually, the imagery is pretty literal. The person is inside, but that's what I found. In order to kill the Wendigo, you have to kill the person inside, because that's the greedy one.
That's so interesting, because one of the descriptors I have for the Wendigo is basically the exact opposite of that, is that it, the creature or spirit has a heart of ice.
Mm.
So the heart is made of ice.
Interesting.
Right. Oh. And I think the ice too, because this creature is widely associated with winter. It is
right.
Typically considered to be, because you're talking about famine and cold weather. And so it is a winter creature. So it makes sense that over time it has attached to winter symbolism like ice. But it's interesting that you have one iteration where it's everything but the heart. And then I found one where it was just the heart.
And that's the monstrous form. I feel like the more contemporary image of one is like a horned beast with antlers. Have you find that too?
Yeah. And that one's way off.
That's where I'm really trying to figure out in my tracking from folklore to contemporary where the antlers came in. Because
so I feel like we're throwing out a lot of information at people right now.
Buckle up. Talking Wendigos.
Like, I can just imagine our listeners trying to put together an image of what we're talking about right now. Yeah, because it's a difficult thing to track. And if you start to research Wendigos, you'll find that a lot of people have tried to track the imagery and figure out how it's developed in these different ways. What I have as the characteristics for basically like the earliest iterations of the Wendigo. It is human-like in form. Mm-hmm. So it is fundamentally a human. It looks like a human.
Yes.
It has gaunt, decaying skin, sometimes yellowish. Mm-hmm. It sometimes becomes a giant. It's so hungry for flesh, it chews its lips off. So that's generally terrifying.
Yeah, I read that too. Yeah, not a chill image at all.
No, not a chill image. But like you said, if you just Google Wendigo, like Google image search Wendigo, you are going to get a ton of images that look completely different from that. In fact, the first like page of images you get is going to be a lot of contemporary, very graphic drawings of,
yeah,
of these beasts with like horns and hair. Some have huge teeth, like,
right,
something completely different from that image. If you ask me, the image of the Wendigo just from some of the original stories, it sounds, visually speaking, it sounds a lot more like a zombie than like a beast or a werewolf, in my opinion.
Very much so. There is this Ojibwe scholar named Basil Johnson, who lives in Ontario, and he gives this description touching on sort of like the humanoid zombie sort of description. I just wanted to read what he said because it reads like straight out of a horror novel, and it's not. It's his descriptions from his findings. He says, the Wendigo was gaunt to the point of emaciation, its desiccated skin pulled tightly over its bones, with his bones pushing out against his skin, its complexion the ash gray of death, and his eyes pushed back deep into their sockets. The Wendigo looked like a gaunt skeleton recently disinterred from the grave. Like, damn, what a
line. That is so spooky.
Oh, and he keeps going. He reads, what lips it had were tattered and bloody, unclean and suffering from suppuration of the flesh, and the Wendigo gave off a strange and eerie odor of decay and decomposition, of death and corruption. Like, damn. Like, what a description.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Which leads to another question, which I think we will discuss throughout the episode. But to me, that is creepier and more terrifying and more frightening than this image of just like this big beast with antlers that has
100%.
Come to be the contemporary Wendigo.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's just because the original Wendigo is just so much more human-like. It resonates, you know, as a human. I'm like, I don't want to become that. So it's like it's more effective.
No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's more effective. Whereas the large hairy beast with antlers, it seems, I don't know, I guess maybe a little more fake, a little more Hollywood and less frightening, in my opinion.
Sure. It's still spooky. I mean,
giant. It's not a friendly image.
Like, yeah. Walking through the woods, last thing I'd want to run into is a 10-foot tall horned Wendigo. You know, that's...
Yeah, yeah. That's no good.
No, thank you.
You probably wouldn't be in for a good time. Probably
shouldn't be in those woods that late at all anyway, but...
So before we get into discussing some of the images that we have, I want to talk about this article that I read that's really well done, very well researched. We'll have a link to it up on our website for you, called The Mythology and Misrepresentation of the Wendigo by Elizabeth McCauley from 2016.
Mm.
And it's a easy read, but Elizabeth pulls from a lot of scholars in Native American folklore to discuss how over time the image of the Wendigo from both its original incarnation and its original meaning has kind of become bastardized by Hollywood. And has been pulled away and like pulled out of context a lot.
Sure.
In terms of the context we talked about, the themes of greed and gluttony and this notion of it being associated with that. And it has kind of just come to be another scary creature that Hollywood can pull from its arsenal of scary creatures.
Which never happens. Total sarcasm. Do this all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And what is particularly interesting, I think, about this article and the point that Macaulay makes is that the tale of the Wendigo in contemporary Indigenous fiction, so stories that are still being told today, has really come to represent things like capitalist greed and colonial violence.
Oh, yeah.
And that is particularly telling when you think about the ways in which Hollywood is adopting this image without really respect to the context. Like, that is an example of colonial cannibalism, essentially, like taking something of artistic value and not really paying proper respect to where it came from or the context in which it was created. And now, not only is that how the story is being told within an contemporary Indigenous fiction, but that is how it's playing out in real life. You know, that is how this creature is being used in contemporary visual culture.
And I think we'll discuss later. There are some examples that do take that into mind very seriously. I think, yeah, largely it's become this like just creature of the woods rather than this hunger starved version of a person that has been driven to desperate means and then something much, much more cruel.
Yeah, definitely. So it's just, you know, it's an important thing to consider when we're thinking about folklore, because folklore is an art form just like anything else. And all different cultures have their own tales, their own art. And obviously, we want to be respectful of the images or the stories that we are taking ideas from.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. And I guess it's just some sad irony, too, that especially with the Wendigo, which originated with Native American cultures, has now become, we have colonized it to mean something else. This actual like being that actually represents desperate and hunger and cannibalizing something, and now means something else.
Right, man. Just some heavy stuff for you to think about there. Want to talk about some art?
More than anything, let's get into it.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back and talk about some art.
Commercial break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We've returned. Hope you enjoyed that message from our sponsors. So we are discussing the image of the Wendigo. I found some really great examples of the Wendigo in visual art. We'll start with this first one that I sent you, Brian. All right, so the first image I want to talk about is by Ojibwe artist Marianne Kabiosi. It depicts a Wendigo. And what I really like about this image and think is interesting about this image is I think it combines the idea of it being a creature and a spirit. Because it has very humanoid-like features, but yet its feet are very large and kind of hairy.
Yeah.
Kind of connecting to that a la Bigfoot thing we mentioned.
Definitely got big feet. It looks like it almost looks like from the waist down, like a werewolf, like with, you know, a kind of a wolf.
Yeah.
Features hairy, like the toes are claws. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's even a little hunched over like werewolves tend to be. But yet in the face, it's very human. And then the use of brush strokes to kind of create almost this like aura around the Wendigo is really interesting, because I feel like it creates a visual for the spiritual element associated.
Yeah, 100%. Looks like the hair kind of disappears into this wind, this blowing mist around her that suggests that she is of the spirit realm, is what I interpret from that. You can trademark that.
Very nice. And then according to this source where I found this image, this kind of speaks a little bit to that mythology of the Wendigo as like a creature of the woods, because apparently stories of the Wendigo were often used to keep children from straying too far away from villages.
A classic boogeyman.
Right? Remember M. Night Shyamalan, The Village?
I try not to, but this is textbook boogeyman.
I like The Village.
That's okay.
Well, anyways, that's the same concept.
Yeah.
We're gonna have to hash out our opinions on The Village after this.
Okay. Yeah, let's go. Let's duke them out over The Village.
We could even do a Hot Takes M. Night Shyamalan episode. That'd be fun.
Yeah. That movie was good. It was fine. The twist just ruined it. That's my thing. Okay.
The twist was great.
The twist
is what made it good.
Twist is what I hated it. All right.
No. All right. Moving on. All right. And then these next two images I'm very excited about, by the artist Norval Morisot, also known as Copper Thunderbird. He was a Canadian artist from the Bengui Nyashi Anishinaabeg First Nation, and he lived from 1932 to 2007. He has sometimes been called the Picasso of the North and also the grandfather of contemporary Indigenous Canadian art.
These images are beautiful.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, as is a lot of his work. And he was pretty prolific, so we have quite a bit of his work. Just stylistically speaking, he works a lot in bold lines and bright colors. There's a clear influence of traditional form line design, but yet it's very contemporary in style. And content-wise, he deals with just a lot of spiritual ideas. This is displayed as shamanistic spirituality, so themes from traditional Native American spiritual ideas, as well as exploring themes of Catholicism in his work. So he kind of explores his relationship with both of those approaches to spirituality, which is really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm a sucker for bright colors, and he does a lot of really large scale works as well. I had a really fun time looking through his work, and there's actually, we'll also have this in our sources on our website, but there is an entire book on him that you can access through the Art Canada Institute. Ooh. Full with images and everything. So we'll link it on our website, but definitely check that out. Norval Morisot. But let's talk about these images he created of Wendigos.
They are beautiful and terrifying the more you look at them. They are the features of the person, like, oh my gosh, they're almost the mouth, they're like pincers of like a beetle. The claws, it's beautiful and flowy until it like abruptly gets sharp and scary.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And the eyes, especially in the second image, are just a real bummer. They're so scary.
just a real bummer. Yeah, in both of the images, the eyes are depicted using red, which I think is interesting because I don't know if that was typically a characteristic, but I think like bloodshot eyes.
Very much so. Yeah.
Emaciated, bloodshot. Yeah, the teeth are really, in both these images, they're depicted very differently. And both times they're very scary and they kind of protrude out of the creature's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the pincer, like the visual that I'm getting from it, that it looks like almost like little claws. It's no lips. No lips.
Sans lips.
Sans lips. And it's eating, especially in the second one, what appears to be bugs. Is that what you're seeing? In the
Yeah. So that's what's really interesting in both of these. In the first one, I think there may be like some kind of beetle or maybe some kind of
frog,
fish.
Maybe.
Yeah. Ooh, a frog. I mean, I think fish because the background is blue, but like there's some kind of maybe amphibious creature. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, in the second one, they maybe are beetles, maybe birds.
Or cockroaches.
Ooh. But both of these are interesting because the Wendigo is typically characterized by eating human flesh. So yeah, it's a very interesting approach. And it makes you think about the myth of the Wendigo. And is this creature just so desperate that it's eating these creatures, these bugs, and getting absolutely nothing out of it?
Yeah.
It's also interesting because in the second one, behind in the background, there is an image of a village. And that is also interesting because in the foreground, the focus of the image is this Wendigo that is eating beetles or birds or something, when there is this village directly behind the creature. So according to, you know, the scary tales that we tell, you would think that the Wendigo would be making its way into the village to, you know, eat the people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what's happening here, which is interesting.
Very, very interesting. It's also, I mean, there's other characteristics in the village too. There's snow in the background. It's definitely cold. The Wendigo here, it looks like there's snow in the hair and on the shoulders. When there's shelter in the background, maybe it suggests that it's not welcome in the village anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And also, the village is so small in the background compared to the size of this foreground Wendigo that sometimes the scale and of the monster in certain iterations.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I like that theory that maybe it has been banished, or also there aren't any humans in the scene. So maybe this Wendigo creature is all that remain, you know?
Oh, no more people.
Okay. Because it's insatiable. Did we bring that up too? That it doesn't really get much out of eating humans. It's like always hungry. Yeah. It's never satiated. No. So it's cannibalistic.
Eating just makes it more hungry. Yeah.
Yes. It just gets more and more hungry all the time. Both really interesting images and a very fascinating artist to check out if you haven't. And then my last image, this is going to lead us into more your realm because this is a pop culture image, but I had to bring it up.
Please do.
It is from a episode of My Little Pony.
Hell yeah, it is.
And it's way the fuck off. It is, of all the depictions of Wendigos, this one is like so far. Like, I feel like it's really so far off from the point that it's quite absurd. The Wendigo, that's what they're referred to in the show. That is the title that is given to these creatures. But they're basically like ghost horses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Flying ghost horses, and they are winter spirits that feed off of basically other people's anger and their fighting, and then they create blizzards.
Okay.
So I mean, the only connection here that I see is the winter theme. You know, Wendigos are associated with winter, and these ghost horse creations are winter spirits as well.
Yep.
But other than that, I don't. Maybe I'm missing something. I do not see any resemblance at all.
The cold and maybe the consuming other. Are there? You mentioned that they're consuming other people, or not people. Other like
their anger, not actually people. They feed off of anger.
Well, I guess that's what I meant. I meant that it's My Little Pony. There's no people. Come on, get in your head in game, Brian. There's but the feeding and the cold environment, I feel like, is the only takeaway that would be connected to classic people.
Yeah, and I mean, I get, you know, it's My Little Pony, and so like I guess it, yeah, everything's got to be horses. Like I see what they were trying to do, but it just feels so far away
from
the original, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it will continue to be far away from the original as we get on into pop culture.
I'm excited to hear what you got.
Buckle up, because we got some spooky stuff to talk about. Okay, first off, let's talk about, I guess, the big one. So there, like we said earlier, there are a lot of different iterations now in film and TV and art. I think, but let's start with art, because art, I think, is a nice and gentle way in with the Hellboy comics. Ooh. There is a character in the BPRD series, which is the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. This is Hellboy's team as they go off and find folklore beasties. And one person they've run into, his name is Daryl. And Daryl was a man that was hunting in the northern woods of Canada. And he got lost, was desperate in this blizzard, and a Wendigo came and killed him. And in this iteration of the comics, the Wendigo spirit is a curse put on someone, and the only way to get rid of it is to kill somebody else and give them the curse. So it's like this basically passed down the line. So the curse itself, not very true to the origins of the Wendigo, but the visual of him is very apt. I sent you the image of the introduction for him. Pale, gangly, like long-limbed, starved beast. But what makes him nice is he's a dude that doesn't want to be a Wendigo. And And he's a good guy, so he doesn't want to kill someone else to get rid of the curse. So instead, he just basically gets locked up for like a decade. And they give him they give him a picture of his family who just thinks he's dead.
Aww.
It's really sad. Poor Daryl.
That is really sad.
Because as time goes on, he will lose his mind. He will become more of a beast and less of a humanoid, or will not be able to retain the memories or his former self. He will become a full Wendigo, but in that time they give him some comfort with a picture of his family. Very sad. Shout out to Hellboy. Those comics are perfect. The next one I have, another big one, is I'm sure you're familiar and everyone else is, The Pet Sematary, the two movies.
Boy.
Oh yeah. Wendigo shows up in the book, and the most recent movie did not show up in the 80s version of this film.
See, that's the version I'm most familiar with, actually.
It was zero Wendigo. Zero. This one, in the book and in the movie, it was this spirit in the woods that was basically haunting this former Native American tribe that occupied this part of the land. But once the Native American tribe caught wind that there was a Wendigo, they fled. The Wendigo did not flee. As time went on, new people came in, but the Pet Sematary, this cursed ground, remained. And so anytime somebody would come and bury something on this land, the Wendigo would have a little hand in bringing them back to do its dastardly deeds. In the movie and in the book, the Wendigo is instrumental to all of the horror that happens throughout the story. It will throw obstacles in the way. It will lure things to the Pet Sematary. It's very much this like puppeteer throughout the story.
That's so interesting.
It holds up to, I guess, in all iterations that we're talking about of the Wendigo, very sinister, not good, bad guy. You know, it's not, we were talking about banshees, they're misunderstood, they're just these messengers. Not the case with Wendigos. Wendigos are not chill. They are always evil, and especially in this case with the Pet Sematary story, it is this unseen force, unseen evil spirit that is orchestrating this torment to these unfortunate people that get too close. I think the new iteration of the movie, I was a fan of it. I know a lot of people weren't, but I loved the image of the bog, the like haunted woods when they finally went past the blockage to actually get to the Pet Sematary. It's like this actual descent into hell is what the visual of the new movie kind of makes, what I think is really powerful, that you, to do this evil, like desperate thing, you have to go to this really scary place, literally and figuratively. So it also shows up in other movies like the 1999 film Ravenous, which featured a Guy Pearce and a Robert Carlyle and David Arquette. He was also in there too.
Oh, David some familiar Arquette. Faces.
Yeah, he was the 90s. He was still doing scream movies, yeah. And he hopped into this little slasher here.
I wonder what he's up to nowadays.
I don't know. If there's a Scream 5, I'm sure he's ready, but ready and willing.
He's just waiting, just prepping.
Come on, Dewey, get him in there. but this film is, I love I really did actually appreciate this film as far as connecting it to the original interpretation of the Wendigo, because this is a historical fiction set during the Western expansion. There is a small settlement of new Americans coming in and basically colonizing the land. And there is a man that comes to the settlement desperate, cold, and he tells this tale how he and his camp of people got lost and they were stuck in this cave and they resorted to cannibalism to stay alive. Basically, the story ensues after that. You get a lot of spooky things. It's this scary horror cannibalism story. But I love that it's the backdrop that it's set in, because I think that is, I think, using it pretty responsibly to actually tell this tale of cannibalism while also very much in the background, there's some actual colonialism happening. I think it's a pretty on-point vehicle if we're talking about, you know, culturally appropriating stories, because they say this in the movie when the Wendigo or the curse is actually revealed. They say some things like, once you eat, your appetite becomes insatiable, and the more you want, the stronger you get, which I thought was a pretty powerful line, thinking about if we're comparing colonialism and even capitalism to cannibalism, that there's no stopping it. You know, I'm not just going to take this little bit. I'm not just going to, like, you know, buy this little bit. I'm going to do it all. I just want more and more and more. It's never satiated.
Yeah.
And the more you eat, the stronger you get, and the more yourself that you lose. You become this beast versus the person that you were. So Ravenous, 1999, highly recommend. It's on Hulu, so if you're looking for a spooky one to watch.
I'm going to watch that today. Like, that sounds like a very smart use of myth and metaphor.
Yeah, I thought so too. Ravenous.
I've been looking for a spooky movie.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's October.
Well, I'd hook you up.
And why would you watch anything else?
I agree. And that's why I myself doing a quick little plug. I'm doing a 31 days of Halloween horror movie. So I'm doing one movie a day for 31 days. You can follow me on Instagram at BRI Muldoon to follow along in my stories. Anyway, back to.
Well done. Great plug, sir. That was on point.
Smash that subscribe button. Everybody subscribe to my Patreon when I make one. So that's Ravenous. Moving on. It's there are many other movies that it's been in. I think these are the big ones that you should look up. It also showed up in the Hannibal TV show, which was so good. If you haven't seen this show, Brian Fuller's Hannibal is incredible and really gross. And in this, as the show goes on, Will Graham, which is a patient and a friend throughout the show of Hannibal Lecter, who is not aware that Hannibal is actually the one doing all these crimes that Will Graham is investigating. As he goes on and as he starts to lose his mind and hallucinate, he starts seeing Hannibal Lecter as a Wendigo. And the image I sent you is this, it's this all black figure, this like ink black figure with horns and antlers and the face mm-hmm. of Hannibal Lecter. It is a spooky looking figure with the red eyes and the basically super thin, bony, muscular, not muscular, zero muscles. It is.
It's bones.
Oh, it's bones. So yeah, I think that's an iteration. And I think what an apt use of that imagery too, if you're talking about Hannibal Lecter. I mean, he is, if nothing, if not
cannibal?
A version of. Yeah. Well, he's a lot of things. He's a smart guy. He's a smooth talker. And he eats people. And I guess now moving away from film and TV, he's also shown up in video games.
Heyo.
It's shown up in a lot of different iterations of small monsters and beasts that you can fight in versions of like World of Warcraft and other things. But there was a game that came out a few years ago called Until Dawn that featured a real apt image of the Wendigo. It is the ashen gray skin. Mm-hmm. It is the super thin, bony figure in the game. It's a great sort of classic slasher film story where you control these characters, and as you go on, your choices interact the story. So it's like this really interactive classic horror movie. But the beast, the monster in that, is a Wendigo that was left abandoned and had to resort to cannibalism and turned into this beast that you see here. The beast is just like the story that we talked before, and the more this beast ate, the faster and stronger and scarier it got. In this game, it's very spooky how fast it moves, which could be a commentary on the cannibal colonial capitalism images that it evokes, that not only does it get stronger, it gets faster, it gets more efficient the more it does. So yeah, those are my images of Wendigos in pop culture.
Wendigos.
Oh, also, they showed up in Supernatural, Charmed, and Grimm. Basically, any story that was ever having a feature of the week, it showed up.
Yeah, actually, because I didn't watch the whole episode, but the Wendigo episode of Supernatural is the second episode ever of that show, actually. It's season one, episode two.
They were ready to go.
And that one is very much... once again, didn't watch the whole episode. I mean, I've seen it before, but I watched like the first half, and that's very much playing off of the Beast of the Woods. It opens with the Wendigo terrorizing a campsite, a couple of guys who are camping. So it has that very like bear attack type feel, you know, like, so it's definitely playing into that idea of the Wendigo as this beast of the woods that is going to attack and eat you.
It's a pretty recognizable and really often used creature motif theme that's used in a lot of different, if they're going to touch on scary folklore, Wendigo is most likely going to come up.
And as we mentioned in the last episode, there is also a scary story to tell in the dark based on the Wendigo.
Oh yeah, there is. If you haven't read that book, or all three of the books, what are you even doing here? This is, I think you should start and then come here.
That is required reading on the Spooky Corner
required
syllabus. But yeah, so I mean, we've been talking for about an hour, and I don't know if we cleared anything up about the Wendigo, because yeah, as we've discussed, I mean, all the way back to its origins, there were so many different approaches to this creature or spirit and different ways of describing it. And then over time, it just took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
If you know more information about the Wendigo or the history of the Wendigo, please email us. Or if you have any other just good examples of the Wendigo in art or contemporary culture, we would love to see them.
Would love to see them, because sadly this time, like last time, I don't have a story of a Wendigo. Never seen one. And I guess, yeah. And I think the last thing we want to touch on is also in some indigenous communities that their environmental destruction is also a trait of a Wendigo, which piggybacks onto everything we were talking about earlier about colonialism and cultural appropriation and cannibalizing cultures, that environmental destruction is also part of that. Because once you start, you can't stop, it seems, you know?
Yeah, and what's interesting about the Wendigo is we talked in the last episode about banshees, like we briefly just talked about how humans make sense of their fear, which is essentially what we're exploring in this entire series, this entire Spooky Corner series. And I feel like the Wendigo, like with the Banshee, that was an exploration of a fear of death or fear of losing someone. And with the Wendigo, it kind of feels like fear of the self, you know, fear of what you're capable of and what your greed can do. And it seems a lot more, I guess, internal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess using just another Western image, it's almost like a Dorian Gray sort of fear.
Oh!
You know?
Like, ooh!
You don't know. It's fear of your actions actually tarnishing your image and how evil that image could become.
Yeah, exactly. And fear of where your desires can lead. And what can happen if you become too desirous? Yeah. It's a fascinating, fascinating, spooky creature.
I love it. We're talking Wendigos.
Talking Wendigos. I could talk more, honestly. I have a lot more stuff, but I feel like that was a lot. I think we did good.
Yeah, people got, I think they get a good idea, or at least I hope we've exposed enough that you want to research more, because there is a lot out there. I mean,
there really is, man.
A few movies and a comic book and a video game, you know, like
so much more than Banshees, like so much more than Banshees. Yeah, hopefully you got something interesting out of this conversation. We'd love to hear your thoughts. What are we talking about next week, Brian?
What are we talking about next week? Honestly, what are we talking about?
Doppelgangers.
Doppelgangers. Yes. The shape-shifting, the fear of the uncanny, the doubling. We're going to get into it. Doppelgangers is a fun little social thing, like, I saw your doppelganger. Not too scary. Actually, seeing your doppelganger, fucking terrifying.
You should be scared.
So we're going to talk about that next time.
Next time on Brian and Corey's Spooky Corner.
Talking spookies.
Spooky.
Ha ha ha!